Hello, Western Wisconsin. Let's see what we're up to. Thursday morning, and it's time for Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. Good to have you along. I'm glad Jim Oliver and I are here today. We are the only male delegation on the program. All of our guests are female. Not all bad. And their scope and diversity is impressive. Jim is going to share a conversation that he had with Emily Karash, marketing director for the Great River Shakespeare Festival, open in June in Winona, Minnesota. Artist and gallery owner Gene Akola returns to talk about the unique event coming next week to the Durand area. Fresh Paint 2014 is all about plein air painting, and that's what they'll be doing all week, painting outdoors and then handing out awards and offering the works for sale at the end of that week. UW Stout has a new postgraduate degree in conservation biology, but students will get so much more than science from people like Dr. Katrina Carlson, who instigated, then lobbied, and got Board of Regents approval for the PSM degree. We'll tell you all about how important it's going to be in the good ship Spectrum sales today with this. We know a lot of good things by their initials today. And here's a new one. CSA. It's the first letter of the words Community Supported Arts, and it's a new way the Eau Claire Regional Arts Council and Arts Center is helping artists, their art, and collectors bond. Rose Dolan Neal is the Director of Visual Arts at ECRAC, and she stopped by with answers to all my questions. Before we wrap our long arms around the CSA program, let's do the same to Rose. Tell me about a typical day in the life of a director of visual arts for a regional arts council and its gallery.
Well, I field a lot of questions. A lot of questions come to me about how to have shows in the gallery. And I direct people to our website for that information, eauclairearts.com. There's a lot of communication that needs to take place with artists because there's so many details that go into each exhibit. Working with our visual arts committee, dedicated community members who jury the Janet Carson Gallery. So there's a lot of fine details that go into every exhibit, and our exhibits are about 6 weeks long. So that's a very full schedule, usually about 12 exhibits per season. I go to other gallery exhibits and I see what works and what doesn't work in other galleries. I speak with other gallery coordinators and directors.
So there is networking among
There's networking, yeah.
What's the history of the Janet Carson Gallery? How long has that been in?
Well, it has been the Janet Carson Gallery about 4 years now. I'm not exactly sure. We've always had a gallery space in the Arts Center. It had humble beginnings. One point, it was our executive director's office, and that was very small.
It's not very big.
That's a very tiny room. And then it moved down to the basement.
Fun.
Because that was the other space that they could find for it.
Good humidity.
But not exactly accessible or visually pleasing.
Yes.
Eventually, it moved up to the ground floor.
The big deal was getting your own door.
Yes, that was a really big deal.
I know, I remember
It took
that.
Some fundraising because it's a nonprofit organization. Funds are always tight, always working really hard to be the best facility we can be at the time. That's a big part of our mission, is to be a resource for our community. Part of that was having a door so people could come in and we could be more visible as a visual arts entity to the public.
Let's talk about CSA. I think we should probably explain the concept first so people understand it. It's designed to become a popular way to support local art artists and collectors. Tell us how you're going to do that.
Well, what we have is a share process.
Okay.
So community-supported arts is based on community-supported agriculture, which has been around for about 20 years, where farmers and shareholders connect. And, you know, you go to the farm and you pick up your big farm basket full of items fresh off of their farm. This is the same idea. I should give credit where credit is due. This program originates from Springboard for the Arts in Minnesota. Okay. It's a fantastic program that they developed, and it's happening all over the country. In fact, I just found out a few weeks ago that there's a CSA, Community Supported Arts, up north in the Superior area. It's happening all over in Wisconsin as well. What you do is we have 25 shares to buy. Those shares are $250 each. And it's really a self-sustaining program. It's not designed to be a fundraiser in any way. Mm-hmm. The Arts Council isn't making any money. So we've got the 25 shares, $250 each share. And then from that pool, we can give a $500 stipend to each of our 9 artists so that they can create the work in whatever process they need. So they have that support right there. And it all comes from the shareholders. So that's how it works.
And shares are available to anyone?
They are available to anyone. They can purchase them on our website, eauclairearts.com. They can click on tickets and it guides them to that process. Or they can simply call or stop into our office. And the phone number is 715-832-2787. And shares are available not just to individuals, but if $250 sounds like a lot of money for a share, you can go in with your family, you can go in with your friends or your coworkers. It's also really great for a business's art collection. So with each share, you get 9 fresh local pieces of art. That's the big draw right there. Mm-hmm. But also within each of those baskets, you'll get bumper crop items. We've gone out to businesses and other arts organizations soliciting for ways to make those baskets explode with the arts. Mm. So right now we've got the Eau Claire Children's Theater donated tickets to a show. That's wonderful. Uh-huh. I mean, that's going to add a value to our CSA share. The University of Wisconsin Eau Claire's Foundation donated these really beautiful bookmarks that are made of natural fibers, and there's basil seeds embedded in these bookmarks, so you can plant them and they grow basil. It's just a lovely addition to the spirit of a CSA. The CSA program, it's over a summer, so it's a growing period, and we'll have 3 pickup events. People can pick up their basket of art in 3 installments. The first one is going to be in June at the Janet Carson Gallery at the Eau Claire Regional Arts Center. And then the second one is going to be, I'm so excited about this partnership, with Volume 1, the end of July, at the Sounds Like Summer Concert Series. So we'll have a big tent set up, and everyone who's involved with the CSA will be invited to come in and pick up their art and meet the artists. And we'll also have our Artmobile there too. So it's very family friendly. There'll be projects the kids can work on and take home with them. Our third pickup event is going to be in September at the Artist Market of Eau Claire in the Phoenix Park Farmers Market area on a Saturday morning. So that's another really wonderful partnership we've developed with the Artist Market. It's so just perfect.
It is. So these are an annual thing? Your share is good for this season or this year?
It's good for the summer season.
Will you always have the same number, or will you increase the number of shares available maybe next year?
We would love to increase the program next year. Mm-hmm. This year, we're testing the waters, seeing how everything grows, seeing if the artists are interested, and they are. We had 22 applications for 9 spots, and it was a really hard choice to make. I'd love to, if I could, mention the artists that we have.
Oh, sure.
If that's okay. We have
there's only 9. How long can that take? We should recognize their names anyway.
Absolutely. So. Sure. Anyone can find all of this information on our website, eauclairearts.com. Okay. Community Supported Arts also has a Facebook page, too, if you're on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Our amazing local artists for our first ever CSA, Jody Balow is a painter. Daryl Bowman is a potter. Tom Gardner is a photographer. Hope Green is also a photographer. Carrie Kiernan is a linocut printmaker. Patricia Mayhew Ham, painter. Kristen Nesseth is a sculptor. Harley Wenzel is a painter, and Aaron Wadul is a poet.
Wow.
So we've got a vast array of arts available. If people want to see some beautiful images of these fabulous artists' work, they can go to our website and also on our Facebook page as well. Our Facebook page is really fun. We're trying to make it very interactive with the artists in the community so that we can get that spirit of community-supported arts going right away. We've got currently a video from Tom Gardner, mm-hmm. one of our photographers, about how he creates his work.
It's called Community-Supported Arts, Rose Dolan Neal. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Again, the contact information is eauclairearts.com, and the phone number is 832-2787, or 832 if you like dialing letters, arts, 832-ARTS. This is Spectrum West.
Support for WPR comes from Water Street Deli in Eau Claire, offering fresh hummus, baba ganoush, and pita chips. Available at the deli, the downtown farmers market, and just local food. On Facebook and at WaterStreetDeliAndGrocery.com.
Love that place. Spectrum Memo, currently in the Janet Carson Gallery at the Eau Claire Regional Art Center. You'll see sculptures by Brian Perrell and Christy Skubin. The exhibit is up through June 13th. EauClaireArts.com, again, is the website. I hope I pronounced their names correctly. If I didn't, my apologies. I'll find out or let me know via email, alan.ross@WPR.com. This summer, the UW Eau Claire Department of Languages will offer its bilingual beginnings language immersion camps at the university's Children's Nature Academy at the Priory. French, German, and Spanish available to students entering grades 1 and 2, both morning and afternoon sessions. Details at 836-2178. So there you go. There's some good stuff going on for kids, as there are many things going on in summer for young people. Spectrum West in May. Gotta love him. May, that is. James, we usually call him Jim, but after all, he's talking about Shakespeare today. James Oliver is here with news about Bill Shakespeare. Gotcha. And a summer festival that uses his name. And I doubt there are any Shakespeare family members left to make any money from the naming rights. Anyway, here's Jim.
The Great River Shakespeare Festival of Winona, Minnesota, will open its 11th season on June 25th. Emily Karash is the director of marketing for the festival, and she joins us by telephone to tell us about all things Shakespeare in Winona. Welcome to Spectrum West.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
As I understand it, Monday, when this is being recorded, is move-in day, and rehearsals begin on Tuesday, so let's get right after it. Tell us about this year's season.
Yes, well, as you said, it is the 11th season for Great River Shakespeare Festival here in Winona, Minnesota. And this summer, we are featuring three main stage plays, which often there's two. We've had three in the past, and so we're really excited to have that third play added to our season this year. Our Shakespeare plays that we're doing are Hamlet, which I think everybody has probably read Hamlet at some point between their high school and college curriculum, and I think we could argue that it's one of the greatest plays that has ever been written. People can find relevancy in Hamlet even today. Right in conjunction with Hamlet, we're also doing Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, which is written by Tom Stoppard. It's become a classic in the theater scene, and it basically turns Hamlet on its head and highlights Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, who are two minor characters in Hamlet, and they become the focal point in Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead. Our third show, which is just going to be a hysterical romp, is The Merry Wives of Windsor, and it brings back Sir John Falstaff, who, if you're a Shakespeare aficionado, you know exactly who Falstaff is, and he tries to work his magic with some of the wives of Windsor, and it's going to be a hysterical, fun show.
Now, there's one other one that is we'll get into a little later, the Apprentice Intern.
Yes, the Apprentice Intern Project is separate from our main stage season. Our apprentices and our interns are students who come to be with us for the season. The apprentices train with our professional company, and they are doing Troilus and Cressida. And I think an easy way to describe Troilus and Cressida is kind of like Romeo and Juliet, but set during the Trojan War.
So where do you recruit the actors and the technical people?
We really, truly have people from all over the country. Some actors, you know, who do come down just from the Twin Cities, which is great, or over from Milwaukee, but we have folks from New York and California and all over the place. They are really, truly some of the best to come and work with us for the season. They've made Winona their summer home, which is really fun. A lot of them are becoming familiar faces to the community and are as much a part of the family here as anybody else.
Just out of curiosity now, are these working actors the year-round, or are they like educators or something like that, or a little both?
Many of them are working all year-round. So we do get people in who are professors at local regional colleges and universities, too. But for the most part, everybody is really, truly, this is their life.
Now, there are also some special events that actually have been going on in addition to the regular season that's being presented.
Yes. Some of the things I am most excited for are the front porch events. And the front porch events happen all season long. We kick it off on Will's opening weekend, which I'll say more about in a bit, with Carlisle Brown, a phenomenal playwright. He's based in the Twin Cities, and he is coming down and joining us for the front porch event on Saturday, June 28th. The other front porch events include symposiums on each of the plays that we're doing. We do a presentation in collaboration with the Frozen River Film Festival, which is also in Winona during the winter months. A favorite of everybody's is Dr. Peter Saccio, a world-renowned Shakespeare scholar, and he comes in to Winona for the weekend and is really an unmatchable experience. And we also wrap up our front porch series with the annual Maria W. Faust Sonnet Contest, which we have local sonnets coming in. We have people from all over the region and country writing sonnets and submitting these sonnets as part of this contest, which is a really exciting feature of our festival, that it's not just about plays. We have a lot more to offer.
She is Emily Karash, the Director of Marketing for the Great River Shakespeare Festival in Winona, Minnesota. Shakespeare has been gone for a long time, and I know that a lot of actors like to be in Shakespeare plays because it really looks good on their resume, but the audiences still seem to come. What is the appeal of the Shakespeare productions?
I think one thing that's really catching is the fact that there's something in each of his plays that doesn't go out of style. It doesn't go away. There really, truly has been every story possible written by William Shakespeare, and he has found words that nobody has been able to match to describe some of these really beautiful or terrible human experiences that everybody has at some point in their life. Even if you've seen Hamlet 10 times, every time you see it, you take something different away, or you feel something different in that performance. And so it's not a static experience. It's constantly changing and growing, and people are discovering new things even now.
Now, I often irritate community theater groups in the area by asking why they don't do any of Shakespeare's plays as part of their season. And, the response is usually something like, well, we have to sell tickets. So I take it, since this is going to be the 11th season, the Great River Festival has been able to make a living just by offering Shakespeare.
Yeah, we have. And one thing that I think is really important and unique for us is one of our missions is to make these plays as understandable and engaging and meaningful as you possibly can. We really strive to make Shakespeare, which is something that people will readily admit they don't like, or they're afraid of, or they just don't get it, that we really strive to make it understandable and attainable for people who otherwise might not feel comfortable grasping it. And so we offer a lot of different educational programming. We're offering some pre-show conversations before every show this year. So if you've never, ever seen a Shakespeare show before, or if it's just been a while and you'd like to brush up, we give you that little primer before you go into the show that you're going to walk in and feel like you've got a good grasp on who people are, what's important, and how things are going to happen.
Well, let's take a look at you, since you're new to this marketing position. You told me that you have had a lifelong involvement in theater, so what got you hooked on the theater habit?
You know, I remember being, I think, 4 or 5 and going to see a production of My Fair Lady, actually, that a good friend of our families was in, and I remember that moment thinking, well, if he can do it, I can do it. And ever since, I've been involved in any and every kind of theater I possibly could be.
So you've acted and directed, have you? Or?
Yes. Coming to Shakespeare was kind of the perfect marriage of exactly what I love. I love acting. I worked as an actor for a while. I have been the drama director for different schools and groups and community groups. But for me, I really have a strong passion for local art programs, specifically theater. And I love to let people know about them. I think our region, the Driftless region, is just so rich in what we can offer to audiences and can rival any of the larger cities around us. And I feel so strongly about getting that word out that being able to work my marketing knowledge and background in with my love of theater is absolutely perfect.
So do you think you will get yourself involved in some Shakespeare productions in the future? Or,
well,
you know, you're right there where it's handy. You should be able to pull some strings, shouldn't you?
Well, maybe. I think I have quite a full plate just in general because we really do have so much going on, not only during the season, but we're, you know, trying to keep things on the forefront of people's minds throughout the year. It's a busy little world that we're in over in Winona.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get back to the business at hand then. How does one get tickets to the festival?
There are a few ways that you can get tickets. The easiest is probably to just go online to www.grsf.org. And right on the homepage there, it looks like a ticket stub. And you click buy tickets, and it will take you to a page where it will list the different shows for the season, and you can just click the buy tickets button. You choose your performance. You can pay online with a credit card, and you're done. You can also call our box office at 507-474-7900. The box office will open full-time on Monday, May 19th, a few days away. Or if people are out and about near Winona and just want to stop in, the hours are from 9 to 5 Monday through Friday, and we're located at 79 East 3rd Street in downtown Winona, which is a separate space from our theater. Our festival office is downtown, kind of city corner from the Merchants Bank building.
Well, we've been visiting with Emily Karash, who is the director of marketing for the Great River Shakespeare Festival in Winona. The festival opens on June 25th and runs through August 3rd in the Winona State University Performing Arts Center. This year's plays are Hamlet, Merry Wives of Windsor, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, and Troilus and Cressida. Emily Karash, thanks so much for being with us.
You're so very welcome. Thanks for having me.
There you go. Show's not complete without a Jim Oliver segment. This is Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. Nice to have you along today. Here's what's happening at the Phipps Ballroom. No, it's not the Phipps Ballroom. It's Phipps colon. I mean Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. All right. Ballroom dance parties will be offered on the third Saturday in May. That's this Saturday in the dance studio. The Minneapolis Guitar Quartet will perform Sunday at 7 p.m. Auditions for The Wizard of Oz will be running in July and early August. The show is running in July and early August. Auditions will be Sunday through Tuesday. There you go. There are exhibitions by 7 regional artists in the galleries at the Phipps. And here's how you get a hold of them to find out even more than what I've just told you. Thephipps.org is their website. Phipps is P-H-I-P-P-S. And the phone number is 715-386-2305. The Menominee Art Music Society presents a spring recital Sunday at 3 p.m. at Peace Lutheran Church. That's in Menominee. May at the Artsy Gallery in Amory features painters Patricia Duncan and Bonnie Hagen and potter Roger Evans. There's an opening reception Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. The exhibition is up through May 31st, artsygallery.org. I'm not sure that reception is correct, but we'll see. I'm usually pretty good at updating these, but I hope I did a good job there. Well, you know, we talk a lot about music and art, but another of our directions is the culture of Western Wisconsin, and that culture most certainly includes how well we do at taking care of who we are and where we live, how we sustain our surroundings and environment. At UW-Stout, they've always been ahead of the crowd in planning for the future, now even more so. Coming in the fall semester, Stout will have a new master's degree offering. It's called the PSM, or Professional Science Master. An idea that led to the necessary work that led to the degree, all organized by Dr. Kristen Carlson, who is founder. Let me make sure that that's right. Yeah. No, Katrina, that's her name. Katrina Carlson. There you go. See, I knew I saw that on the page, and I went, that's not right, even though I typed it. Katrina Carlson. She's founder and director of SSI, the Sustainability Sciences Institute. Let's talk about sustainability, because I think people out there, including myself, we hear that word a lot. We don't really know what sustainability is. What's the definition as it pertains to what you're doing?
I'm glad that you asked that. I think a lot of times people think of sustainability, and they only think of that in terms of the environment and how do we protect the environment. But when we're really working to be sustainable, and that means meeting the needs of the present without compromising our ability to meet the needs of future generations and also without compromising biodiversity in the process, we have to think of that from multiple kind of facets. So we think about sustainability of our social systems. We think about the sustainability of our economic systems and the sustainability of the environment. And those are all interconnected.
As I searched online, as we always do nowadays, the first definition that popped up was this: sustainability is how biological systems endure and remain diverse and productive.
Sure. And
does that make sense?
And that's exactly right. And that's why all of those, you know, facets, the social side, the economic side, the environmental side, are part of ensuring that those biological systems can endure.
The way we relate on a human level, we all know what diversity is. It's interesting that diversity, well, just the word being diverse, is important in nature. I'm trying to wrap my hands around, biological diversity. If, without it, why are we in trouble?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'll come at it from the plant scientist side. So my background is I'm a plant pathologist by training, but I've done a lot of work with plant breeders. Often plant pathologists and plant breeders will work together. And if you look at the work of really excellent plant breeders, they will work with wild species of our cultivated plants and work to incorporate traits from these wild species into our cultivated varieties. And these will be traits that could increase their resistance to disease, increase our ability to grow them in a wider range of climates. And so that diversity is really invaluable. It's our greatest resource. When we don't protect it, we have limited our futures immeasurably. We don't even know what we've lost when we don't protect that diversity.
Within a PowerPoint presentation, a rather short one that you sent, you made it relatively easy to understand the relationship within a graphic. It was three circles, kind of in a triangle: people, profit, and planet, and they overlap in the middle, and within that overlap is the word sustainable. So in a nutshell, in an easy, small nutshell, that's what's needed, those three things coexisting?
Yeah, and us considering each of those facets. And any new systems we're developing or the work that we're doing or considering whether, you know, an approach will be sustainable. Have we considered the social side of this? Have we considered the impact on the environment? And have we considered the reality of the economics associated with it?
Yeah.
So we will not have a sustainable system unless we've considered each of those facets and they're interconnected and part of the process.
Yeah, interesting that in this, and maybe it's just this day and age, but within those three circles, I'm not sure that as a kid I would have seen the word prophet, but prophet has come into its own as far as importance goes. I mean, you know,
absolutely.
You've got, you have people, you have planet, but then we have to throw prophet in within those two important natural things.
Yeah, and in my PowerPoint I had the word prophet, and you'll hear that, people, profit, planet, quite often in sustainability circles. I tend to use the word economy or the economic side,
okay,
because it's a broader term.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, people have to benefit from this in some way, and it's
sure.
not necessarily monetary, but there has to be some, you know, way to keep this viable in terms of whatever economy exists and in whatever area that we're working in.
Mm-hmm. Let's add to what we've been talking about the word science, and by doing that, we have your brainchild, which is the Sustainability Sciences Institute, or SSI,
yep,
at UW-Stout. You have an impressive list of projects on which you and students have worked, many groups and associations with whom you've partnered. Is that the foundation of SSI, the kinds of things that are in that chart that shows that you worked on this lake and that lake?
Our beginning. So
okay.
This is a pretty new initiative. We started about 2 years ago, and the whole idea of calling the work that we're doing the Sustainability Sciences Institute is that I believe sustainability must be very interdisciplinary, and we have to connect our work. If we think about that Venn diagram, we have to connect our work with the needs of industry and agency and community. So we all need to be, you know, working together. And so those projects that you see are actually many of them with one of my colleagues that works with me in SSI. I call him our distinguished scientist. His name is Bill James, and he's a limnologist who studies lakes and streams. And he worked with the Army Corps of Engineers for about 30 years, and we were very fortunate to have the opportunity to bring him into our institute. And we started with his work because he already had these great connections to these lake associations and to these industries and agencies that really fell very nicely under this umbrella of sustainability and sustainability sciences.
Mm-hmm.
So we hope that as we grow, we'll have many more opportunities and many more experts like Bill that are able to help us transfer the knowledge of what happens at the university to meet the needs of industry and agency, and then really work on training students so they can see that full picture of, you know, it's not just the theory of what you're learning in the university, it's also how do I apply this to the needs of society and what industry and agency need.
On the phone with us, Dr. Katrina Carlson. She is founder and director of the Sustainability Sciences Institute at UW-Stout. We're going to get to the implementation of the PSM. It is the Professional Science Master in Conservation Biology. I saw that it was projected for the fall of 2014.
Yep.
Is it a done deal or not?
Yeah, so we'll have about 8 students this fall.
Okay.
The first group of students. We're very excited about that.
You know, I have to tell you, I'm enjoying this immensely because it's interesting and vital, but also because I get to now use words like proteomics and and limnological and biostatistics. You know, that stuff makes me feel real smart just to pronounce them correctly.
Well, we're still enrolling students for this fall, so you're welcome to join the cohort.
I imagine myself as a student sitting with buddies in the student center getting up to leave saying, gotta go, I've got limnology in 10 minutes.
There you go, that's right.
I'm going to use limnology a lot now.
Good.
How many people know that limnology is the study of inland lakes?
Very, very few people know that.
Yeah, well, lots now. Here's something that came to mind as I was perusing all your material. Is there a psychology course embedded within the program that trains scientists involved in conservation how to handle the disregard and the indifference that they will encounter from certain factions of our society, those who discount the scientific, the environmental, and the ecological realities?
You know, that's a fantastic question. And there is certainly psychology that studies how and why people will follow sustainability practices. And I think that there is a way in the future that we could connect some of that to our program. And that's one of the great things about sustainability is that it is and should be very multidisciplinary. We don't have that really connected at this point because, you know, you want to keep the program fairly tight and focused early on. But certainly it's a challenge and it's a frustration. But I actually think increasingly we're seeing that less and less. People want to have good practices and they want to protect the land that they feel connected to. Mm-hmm. So I actually think, maybe I'm an optimist, but I actually think there's really a changing tide. I generally don't hear that, and mostly people might not know what to do or they might not have an awareness, mm-hmm. but for the most part, people are pretty committed to it. In fact, I think the assumption that they're not is sometimes damaging because then it's sort of like becomes sanctimonious on mm-hmm. our part. And I personally try really hard not to take that approach. I try to approach it from we're all working together. That's how I try to train my students as well, mm-hmm. that especially Wisconsinites. I think having grown up in Wisconsin myself and really feeling connected to Wisconsin, I really think that we care about the environment and we do want to protect and conserve, and we see it as a very, very important part of our quality of life.
I, for one, hope your optimism is right on. That brings us to the degree, the proposal that you submitted, which I was fortunate enough to read. What does it take to get a new degree implemented? What kind of time and effort does it take?
Being an optimist, I think I underestimated all the hoops and bureaucracy and planning. And it's a lot more than just saying, yeah, people will love this. Let's do it. There is, I would say, probably 10 different committees and 2 different application series that you have to go through. So the initial process is going through a series of internal or on-campus committees, letting them know that you're thinking about doing this. They call it a notice of intent. Guess what, everyone? I would like to do this. Then there's a whole discussion period where you speak with your college level, at the university level, series of administrators. So once it's approved at that level, then you go through and actually work to develop the program. And that involves communicating with similar programs in your area, in your geographic area, so you're not competing, and but you have your own niche, doing a needs assessment, what the industry needs would be, will these people get jobs, you know, all of those types of kind of vetting. Mm-hmm. And then eventually it goes through another series of committees. All the courses have to be approved through a series of committees. Then it goes up to the Board of Regents for final approval. We were very ambitious, and we got ours done in about a year and a half.
Wow. Well, congratulations on it.
Thank you.
Where can people who are listening go to get information on becoming better sustainers?
Oh, that's a good question. It's not actually our Sustainability Sciences Institute, but we have a sustainability director at the more campus scale and more directly working with the community, Sarah Rickle, and she's a great resource. I also think just looking at your Wisconsin DNR, there's excellent resources in terms of land conservation and folks that you can contact through there. So really, there's many, many places mm-hmm. that they could connect with depending on what their interest is.
Well, I, for one, say we need more Dr. Carlsons in the world because the world literally depends on what you're doing and what the students you educate are and will be doing. So way to go.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for being with us here on Spectrum West. I have a feeling that you may have just become my authority, my resource when I need when I need answers for certain things.
I'm very happy to do that or connect you with the person that would be the best resource.
Cool, because we have so much stuff going on. You know, we have all the frac sand popping mm-hmm. up, and it's
yep.
just people's heads are spinning.
And that's a perfect sustainability question because of the whole economic side.
Yeah.
And it's very, very complex, and that's why sustainability and sustainability sciences is so necessary. If you think about the political side of that and the economic side and people need jobs and, you know, it's very complicated. It's certainly not an easy issue.
It appears to me that maybe sustainability people are the moderators. You have people way on one side who say we have to do this no matter what it costs to the environment or to whatever, and people way on the other side who say, oh, no, I'm going to keep you from doing that. Whereas maybe the sustainers, the sustainability people are the ones who can say, well, come on, let's come together and talk about this. We'll find a way.
Yeah, I'm glad you say it like that, because I think too often sustainability is kind of over on one side of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And you're absolutely right. It's considering all of those aspects, although sometimes issues are black and white, and sometimes you say, no, this simply can't happen or this must happen.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right, making all of those factors part of the final consideration, it really is part of sustainability. And that's why the field must be interdisciplinary and broadly focused.
Our young people and those looking to add to their education, they are in good hands. Dr. Katrina Carlson, UW Stout. West Wisconsin culture is your culture, so stay involved and help sustain what we have and make it better when you can.
Here's what's on stage in Western Wisconsin theater venues. The Infinity Monologues, a new play by Jack Bushnell, a UW Eau Claire English professor, will be performed tonight, Thursday, by the Bare Bones Ensemble Theater at the Volume 1 Gallery in Eau Claire. The Festival Theater of St. Croix Falls will present The Masquerade Mystery at the Chamberlain Mansion, Saturday at the Chateau St. Croix Winery and Vineyard. The Old Gem Theater production of Charlotte's Web will be staged for the general public Saturday and Sunday. The show will be available for groups through June 6th at the Old Gem in New Richmond. That Love and Feelin', the story of the Righteous Brothers, will play Friday and Saturday at the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater in Hudson. The show will play Fridays and Saturdays and selected Sundays through August 14th. And the Eau Claire Children's Theater will hold auditions for the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee at 5:30 p.m. Sunday and Monday at the Oxford Theater. And that's some of what's happening in live theater around the region. For Spectrum West, I'm Jim Oliver.
Spectrum Memo, don't miss the Sunday morning coffee walks with park rangers, one Sunday each month through September in the St. Croix Valley. This Sunday, the 18th, walk the Ridgeview Trail. It's free and open to all of us. Information is by phone at 715-483-2274. This is the Accordion Orchestra. Love this music. Speaking of love, I love it when the words are easy and one can speak French without having to work at it, like plein air, which means outside or in the open air, a place where most painters don't usually work, but most also enjoy from time to time. One of those times is next week, beginning Sunday, in and around Durand, as Fresh Paint 2014 unfolds. Artist and gallery owner Jean Acola and I talked about it on the phone just the other day. I can't think of anything more dependent on the weather. Yes or no?
Not really.
No?
No. The artists are kind of like, you know, the mailman. Neither rain nor sleet nor snow. There's some painters in this group. For example, Derek Davis, who is our featured artist and juror. He's got some beautiful snow scenes, winter scenes, and he painted outdoors in the snow. You have to add some additives to the paint to keep the paint from getting too sticky and freezing.
I'm trying to imagine that precipitation would be good for the watercolorists.
No, I'm sorry to correct you, Al, but it's actually the other way around.
Ah, okay.
Oil resists water, right?
Mm-hmm.
So oil paints are pretty much okay. The water just runs right off of them. Whereas watercolors...
Well, no, I was just thinking that maybe the water would add something to it. But then maybe raindrops.
Well, actually, I did have that happen one time. I was out in Montana, and I was painting this teepee scene in the woods. And all of a sudden, it started raining, and so it created these little puddles and splashes on the painting, which was mostly finished. And when it dried, it made it look as if there was smoke coming out of the teepee.
Oh, my.
And it worked. It was great.
I'm trying to imagine what painting outdoors does to an artist. Now, we've just been talking about the physical aspects of it. Is it so enlightening or so emancipating that it makes artists or helps artists do things they don't normally do?
Yeah. I mean, there's one expression that a lot of us outdoor painters talk about called chasing the light.
Hmm.
And the Impressionists were probably the first major outdoor painters, and they were all about representing light and its effect on the environment. As an artist, you'll see some effect, you know, like the morning light striking the tops of the new buds on the poplar trees, let's say. And you start a painting with that in mind, and then half an hour later, it's gone. The sun has moved, you know. It changes. It's still beautiful. So you follow that. Do you make your painting what you see now or what you remember it as a half an hour ago? So and over the course of 2 or 3 hours of a painting, you know, it's constantly changing. And so do you chase it or not?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's... Mm-hmm. Along those lines, can a painter simply paint what he or she sees, or do they have to become part of the scene? I mean, do they have to feel the breeze and hear the birds?
Well, that kind of reminds me of that concept of being in the zone. So when you're in the zone, you know, you're part of the whole thing. And, yeah, I think that definitely helps the painting. But when you're in the zone, you're also losing your sense of time and place in a way as well. You know, you sort of surrender all of those conscious things, and then you go into, it's more of an, you know, you're painting on a more unconscious level, I guess is what I would say.
Uh-huh. We're talking with Jean Acola, and the event is Fresh Paint 2014. It's a plein air painting event, and it's all next week. It is painting every day, Sunday through Friday. Do people select what to paint?
There are some things that might guide them strategically. One is they have to be in or around Durand within an 8-mile radius. So we supply them with a map of that. Then we have conditional purchase awards where the Pepin County Historical Society has pledged to purchase a painting with the most historical significance.
Hmm.
And then a gentleman, Carl Morsbach, has pledged to purchase a painting that's done on his property down in Ella, Wisconsin, on the Chippewa River. So those are some of the factors. Oh, the other thing, too, is we'll have the Best Nocturne Painting Award, which is nighttime. The small town city lights or the lights reflecting in the river off the bridge, all these different kind of subject matters will draw the artist.
Wow. You also have a couple other aspects of the event this year. The Chalk Walk was listed.
Right. So we kick off the event with two things on Sunday, May 18th. At 1 o'clock, we start with a chalk walk, and that's a teen art challenge. So we're inviting students ages 11 to 19 to put together a team of up to 3 students. We're going to provide them with some really good quality chalk. It's actually free if they pre-register, and they can get a registration form at freshpaintevent.org. And the day of the event, it's not free, though. I kind of need to know how much chalk to
sure.
prepare. So anyway, the students will have their square right in front of the old courthouse museum, weather permitting. If we have bad weather or rain or whatever, we'll move it to the downtown area under the awnings.
Okay.
And then at 2 o'clock, we start the quick paint, which is the adult painting event that kicks off the plein air event. The artists have 2 hours to complete a painting, and it'll be also in the area near the old courthouse museum.
I have a general question about artists.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where these things come from. They just pop up when I'm preparing. Is art person-specific? If a person is really good at painting still life, can one assume that they will also be really good at landscapes?
No, I would say not. I mean,
okay.
I think from my own experience that the thing that you're most interested in, the thing that you practice the most, because you're maybe most interested in it, you're going to be better at that. It's the practice, but then with the practice comes confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, I think, shows in the work. One thing I always say, though, too, is that a lot of us artists who will go and do these open studios with a live model, we don't necessarily sell that work or show that work, but to me, that's sort of like a piano player who is practicing their scales,
mm-hmm.
kind of a way of honing your skills, even though that's not the area that you're necessarily known for or do the most work in.
I was noting, of course, that many people specialize, and I wondered if that was only a preference rather than an ability, limited to what was taught to them or learned or whatever. And then I wondered, should I expect an artist to be able to paint anything? Picturing, you know, a Rembrandt who, when it came time to paint the house or the window frames, just couldn't handle it.
Yeah, I don't know about the window frames, but it helps if you focus on something, right?
Mm-hmm. Fresh Paint 2014. It is May 18th through the 24th. Again, the website is what?
Freshpaintevent.org.
And if they have questions, you have an email address.
Jean@ImaginationNation.org. That's the sponsoring organization is actually Imagination Nation. Jean@ImaginationNation.org. And Al, can I mention one more kind of major public event?
You sure can. You're on.
Artists will be in the Durand area painting all week, and then they submit their work for hanging exhibition and sale and awards. And on Friday afternoon, the award ceremony is at 6 o'clock Friday, May 23rd, at the Old Courthouse Museum. The city of Durand is supporting the best of show. And then as soon as the awards are presented, those people who've pledged purchase awards are able to go in and select the piece that they want to purchase.
Hmm.
And then once, as soon as they're done, the paintings are available for purchase to the general public. And the paintings will also be hung through the next day, Saturday, the 24th, until 2 o'clock at the Old Courthouse Museum. then there may be some at the Akola Gallery after that.
It's quite an energetic undertaking, a whole week of art and artists commiserating and fun. You can come to Durand and just have a great old time because there's places to go and eat. And
right. There's a number of good restaurants downtown. Mm-hmm. And for those who are staying overnight, we have the Cobblestone Inn and Suites here in Durand, which is a really nice, relatively new hotel. I also wanted to mention, too, that we really appreciate the support we've gotten from the Department of Tourism. We received a GEM grant from them for this event in the last 2 years. Some of the major businesses have been great sponsors. Xcel Energy, Bowerbill, the Chippewa Valley Hospital, Security Financial Bank. Really appreciate. Couldn't hardly do it without them, actually.
Just goes to show you, when you do good things, good people show up.
That's true.
What else is true is that Jean and her friends work hard, as so many others do in West Wisconsin, to provide events that make our lives more enjoyable. And Spectrum West is delighted to tell you about them and discuss the details. Plein Air, Fresh Paint 2014, all next week in and around Durand. Again, the website is freshpaintevent.org. Spectrum Memo, this is the weekend of the 2x4 Music Festival. Two nights, four acts each night. Wow. Friday and Saturday, it's at the historic Silver Dome Ballroom just west of Neillsville. Sam Yannis, formerly with the iconic Bodines, and his new band will be performing Saturday along with Semi Twang, also from Milwaukee, Eric Koskinen, plus Molly Mayer and her Disbelievers. Before that, Friday night, Charlie Parr's there, along with the White Iron Band, Sloppy Joe, and here's a good band name, Hobo Nephews of Uncle Frank. Doors open at 5 p.m., music at 7. The website is silverdomeballroom.net. Coming up next week on Spectrum West, after a couple decades, they're making some upgrades at the Phipps Center in Hudson. We'll find out how. A farmer and a chef join forces for some foodie fun in Stockholm, Wisconsin. Flambeau Valley Arts in the Ladysmith area is putting the finishing touches on the summer concert series called Music in the Park. Now, in coming weeks, we're going to talk with a UW professor, guy from down at UW-Madison, who's written books about things like yodeling in Dairyland, Wisconsin folklore, like Ole and Lena. Yeah, he has five CD, a DVD collection, folk songs of another America, field recordings from the Upper Midwest, and a truckload more. Interesting guy, and a Rice Lake native, by the way. Plus, a native of Black River Falls and a UW Eau Claire history grad is now the curator of the Green Bay Packer Hall of Fame. He'll be joining us here as well. And, of course, in coming weeks and months, more. Always more on Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. It's been fun today. For your Thursday listeners, have a good Friday. For your Friday listeners, have a wonderful weekend, and we'll be back next week. Thanks.